Good afternoon, this is Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is still the 2nd of June, 2023, and we're going to continue with part two of this lecture. We were discussing how macrophages will transport into the adipose, and when that occurs, there's an alteration in lipid metabolism in the adipocyte that helps regulate the macrophage to maintain an M1 morphology and biochemistry, which means pro-inflammatory. And we were getting into some of the actual biochemical and organochemical processes that are occurring there, and that's what I'm going to do right now. So I was mentioning that in obese patients, triacylglycerol causes a tremendous amount of lipotoxicity to the adipocytes. And one of the things that can be visualized in microscopy is an increase in cell size. But what's happening chemically is an increase in hypoxia. So that might be contrary to what you think are happening, but I'm going to put this all together for you. So the capillary network basically can't maintain its normal relationship with adipose because of the expansion of the adipocytes because of the increase in triacylglycerol. Remember that adipocytes don't so much divide as they increase via expansion. Because there's no water involved, all you're doing is increasing the neutral lipid content. Okay, that's what's going on in adipose. Now, that, if you think about it, just physically, or geographically, is a term I like to use, that results in having adipocytes that are going to be very far away from blood flow. Okay, so that distance from the vasculature will mean a decrease in oxygen, therefore hypoxia. And what happens when you get hypoxia? You get the transcription of hypoxia-inducible factor. That will then cause adipocyte activation, which basically means the production and release of free fatty acids and pro-inflammatory cytokines, particularly interleukin-1 beta, interleukin-6, and also macrophage migration inhibitory factor, MIF. And finally, monocyte chemoattractant protein 1, that's MCP1. Now, with all of that going on, with proteins being synthesized that are going to enhance the meta-inflammatory state of the adipose that has been inundated with high levels of macrophages that are all at M1 phenotype, you're going to get an increase in reactive oxygen species production. Now, that increase in ROS, which is concomitant with increases in adipocyte size, will induce within the cells endoplasmic reticulum stress. So now you got an ER-SOS response. That will lead to further pro-inflammatory and ultimately an insulin-resistant phenotype. And you know why? Because we talked all about the insulin receptor degradation. Okay, so macrophages basically will respond in multiple mechanisms to the stimuli of the microenvironment in the adipose. And we can call that macrophage activation, as I've been. So when we talk about polarization of macrophages, that means they're going to be either M1 or M2. So those are the two terms you have to keep in mind, and separate. These macrophage responses are basically working in a combination modality that causes the expression of extracellular and intracellular pro-inflammatory cytokines. And when this occurs, this activation, the pro-inflammatory stimulus itself, is presumed to be associated with a normal mechanism to prevent infection in the adipose. That's correct. That's why the macrophages are likely there. Because when you get a disease state in an organ system like the adipose, macrophages will diapedes into that system and then carry out the functions of the macrophage, which means to destroy intracellular, in this case, intracellular pathogens. Okay. And of course, when they're in circulation, they will be intercellular, not intracellular pathogens, once in circulation. That's the business of a macrophage. So the same thing will occur when a macrophage is presented with a microorganism, a pathogenic microorganism, will happen in the adipose. So what kind of pro-inflammatory cytokines? We mentioned a few. Here's a few more. TNF-alpha, interleukin-12, and interleukin-23, along with interleukin-1 beta. And remember, too, you have a lot of reactive oxygen, but also we have nitric oxide produced. Now we need to cover that off what's going on there. Okay. So let's do that. Let's go back and describe something about reactive oxygen. So you have a superoxide anion. You know, that's a very reactive oxygen species, and it can be generated from cellular activity of enzyme oxidases. And this can occur in the vascular wall. Now, superoxide anion will react with nitric oxide, which is also a radical, and that will produce peroxynitrite. So the reaction between NO and superoxide occurs almost at the level of diffusion limited rate. It's very rapid. So that's some 6 to 10 times greater than the removal of superoxide by the copper zinc superoxide dismutase. So the enzyme can't keep up with the reaction of superoxide with NO dot. So that means the interaction between nitric oxide and superoxide will essentially do multiple pathological events in the adipose. One of them will be that nitric oxide will be depleted because it's reacting with much more massive amounts of superoxide. So whatever nitric oxide can do to regulate the system. Now this is again endothelia, but endothelia associated with adipose, associated with macrophages. It means you're not going to be able to maintain key vascular functions. That is smooth muscle tone, of course, blood pressure, but also platelet activation and all the mechanisms of vascular cellular signaling phenomena. So you get this loss of nitric oxide, basically a bioavailability. That's going to be associated with an increased vascular superoxide production. And that's going to play a major role in the pathogenesis of endothelial dysfunction, which is associated directly with hypertension. Right? So this is what's going on in the metabolic syndrome. Now, you know, subsequent to this, you're going to get another pathological state, and that is atherosclerosis. Okay. So when you think about the effects mediated by nitric oxide removal, it suggests that there might be a specific role for that superoxide nitric oxide reaction. And that could include a modulation of vascular signaling, because now you're talking about a equilibrium change for redox sensitive mechanisms. That means peroxynitrite formed from that NO superoxide reaction may actually play a role in corrupting the redox sensitive mechanisms. Okay. What role? It could have a negative effect on vascular tonicity. And that's by the oxidation, not only of the vascular dilation and expansion, but also by an auto-oxidation of cellular lipids and proteins. including any associated low-density lipoprotein. So that can give you a direct toxicity from the peroxynitrite. You're also going to generate from peroxynitrite, I should mention, nitrosylated thiols. And they may function as an endogenous nitric oxide donor, which may actually ultimately lead to vasodilation. And that vasodilation, if it occurs, could inhibit subsequent platelet aggregation. So put this all together. Now, this is from animal studies and from human studies. There's a balance between nitric oxide and superoxide production. That means there'll be a balance to those two substrates for the product, peroxynitrite. And the relative ratios of the substrate to the product will determine the relative abundance of all of those radicals, and therefore the regulation of vascular function in metabolic syndrome-associated hypertension and many other associative vascular disease states. So when you talk about human blood vessels, it's been shown that a reduced nitric oxide mediated vasodilation in the artery and the veins from patients with vascular disease risk factors such as obesity have an increased superoxide production. So the question is that a direct nitric oxide superoxide event coupled with peroxynitrite formation, or does it have something to do with the other reactive oxygen and reactive nitrogen radicals which will be formed in the process? That's not clear. So what you need to understand, again, from this brief discussion, superoxide is released from the endothelium to form a composite increase in reactive oxygen throughout a vessel wall in a human artery and a vein. Then you're going to get endothelia-derived nitric oxide scavenging by the superoxide, and the product's going to be peroxynitrite. And that scavenging between the superoxide and the nitric oxide occurs more abundantly in human arteries than in the vein. So you have to understand, endothelial nitric oxide is going to have a major role on net superoxide release. That's going to play a role in the corresponding alteration of the molar concentration of peroxynitrite in the artery. Okay? And so that means there's going to be this abundance change. Now, there are implications for functional vascular nitric oxide and superoxide signaling pathways in association with hypertension, and not just in hypertension, but other vascular diseases. So that's still kind of an open question as to what might be going on. Now, let me give you a little bit more detail about reactions. There's a reaction between superoxide and nitric oxide. And again, we told you the main product of that reaction is peroxynitrite anion. Now that will exist at neutral pH in equilibrium with its acid. Now that's peroxynitrous acid, right? It's protonated. That acid has a very strong oxidizing chemistry. And indeed, it will react, that is, peroxynitrous acid will react with nitric oxide to yield yet another nitrosating intermediate. Now adding carbon dioxide, which is present in concentrations as high as a millimolar in all the cells we're talking about here, and that will alter the equilibrium of this chemistry to a product formation pattern that will yield nitrogen dioxide radicals with only a slight increase of additional nitric oxide. Okay? Ultimately, all of that can yield nitrate. Okay, that would be the ultimate end product. So it depends on if there's excess superoxide. If there's excess superoxide, then what you're going to generate is hydroxyl anion. That's the most potent, dangerous reactive oxygen species. Whereas if you have excess nitric oxide, all you're going to generate is more silver-free radical, but nitrogen dioxide. Now, if there isn't any excess superoxide or nitric oxide, you will make that peroxynitrite anion. Okay, so you get the idea. And pH has a very small role here, because most of the pH in all these different cells is going to be maintained somewhere between 6.6 and 6.8. So that means there's going to be very few other reactions occurring. If you lower the pH, obviously you're going to make that peroxynitrous acid. Right? So you get the idea about all the different chemistry that's going on. Now, the peroxynitrite and the acid, okay, that couple is a product of the diffusion-limited reactions associated with nitric oxide and superoxide, as I've been saying. And because of that diffusion-limited reactivity, it's probably a very significant mediator of the pro-inflammatory and tissue injury state in obese individuals. And that's because of its ability to generate nitrate and oxidize biomolecules in general. Now, you have this idea that peroxynitrite itself is a potent oxidant. And of course it is in vivo and in vitro. And it's been suggested that the relative rate of nitric oxide and superoxide production, and therefore steady state molarity, is indeed the critical determining step in the production of peroxynitrite in vivo. Okay. Now, this has been argued against because we're not talking about acidic environment like we do when we're studying these reactions in a test tube. We're talking about something near neutral pH. Now, because of that, you might have other reactive oxygen species. There's a whole host of reactive nitrogen and reactive oxygen species that could come from these coupled chemical reactions. And some of those might also have a negative effect on vascular function. Okay? So I think I've gone through this sufficiently to stop with the discussion of reactive oxygen. I just wanted to give you that because it's so important to understand what happens in the obesogenic state. Why there are so many diseases associated with it is because of all of this potent chemical oxidation production that can yield protein oxidation, fatty acid oxidation, thus corrupting most of cellular functionality. Okay. Now that, you know, that's just putting it in one little sentence, but when you think about visceral obesity, we know that that is a major risk factor, I guess I'll call it, for the metabolic syndrome. And what I just went through there was a reactive oxygen lens of metabolic syndrome. Because remember, we're talking about hypertension there. So the metabolic syndrome that was first described describes a systemic and a local inflammatory state. And therefore, you get multiple organs in the body that have a meta-inflammatory domain function. Now, what occurs there is a chronic, low-grade state of inflammation with no infection. Also, there's no additional trauma or tumorigenesis or even autoimmunity. This is all associated just with the visceral adiposity. You understand? So there's even a new term from, again, the immunologist, They like to call this adipo inflammation. Because again, remember how this started out? Starts out with adipocyte hypertrophy because of additional triacylglycerol storage. Adipocyte hypertrophy will lead to hyperplasia. That will then involve an increased infiltration of the monocytes and macrophages. Then you have now a localization of a pro-inflammatory polarized M1 macrophage, which gets further induced to be pro-inflammatory by the local production of interferon gamma. Okay. And that will then lead to the secretion of interleukin-6, another very potent pro-inflammatory cytokine, and more TNF-alpha and interleukin-1 beta. Now, if you have a M2 macrophage, remember those are considered anti-inflammatory. So if you polarize towards M2, that will induce interleukin-4 and interleukin-13 production in association with the secretion now of interleukin-8 and 10. Okay, so that's going to alter the relative ratios of anti-inflammatory and pro-inflammatory cytokines, you understand? Now, in addition to all of this discussion, remember you have secreted adipokine alterations from an anti-inflammatory to a pro-inflammatory state. This will lead to further adipocyte necrosis due to local hypoxia governed by a dysregulated autophagic response because of the activation of internal inflammasomes, which will modulate the toll-like receptors and then turn on a series of epigenetic modifications. So what happens at the gross physiological level, we already have talked about insulin resistance, systemic, in fact, insulin resistance of all the peripheral organs that will lead to further inflammatory responses in all those tissues that will then be abundant in systemic circulation. And one of the ways that's measured in obese patients is by measuring the amount of C-reactive protein. So the activation of the inflammatory transduction cascade will lead to inhibitory phosphorylation of the insulin receptor, thus preventing insulin potency, or the other way of saying, will introduce insulin resistance. At the same time, you're going to get ectopic lipid accumulation in the liver, in the muscle, in the pancreas, in the pericardium, and even in the lung. Now, when I say ectopic, this isn't intracellular oil droplet. No, this is lipid accumulation that is essentially outside of the cell. So it has no regulation or association with bioenergetics at all. That lipid can auto-oxidize, further exacerbating the pro-inflammatory response because of circulating innate and acquired immune cells. Okay? So you see how this is really a very, very dangerous metabolic state, simply obesity, right, in humans. What else do I want to say here? Remember, too, that when you get diacylglycerol production, that can come from phospholipase C, or that can come from Kennedy pathway phosphatidic acid phosphatase, which will occur in these systems, in these organs, and in these immune cells. That's going to activate, remember, the protein kinase C epsilon, particularly in the liver and in muscle tissue, which will also inhibit the insulin signaling pathway. We went through this whole process. That's the kinase cascade, right? So what you end up with obesity is insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, because glucose isn't being taken up. So as I said, that is an effect of all this lipid metabolism dysregulation, that you get the increase in circulating glucose. Circulating glucose is not the main pathobiochemical state in type 2 diabetes. It is the high levels of circulating lipid that's causing all this havoc in all these different tissues and organs. Hopefully not explain that thoroughly enough to you to really get a good idea what I mean by pathobiochemical events. Okay. So I want to continue on here, but let me check my time because I've got a couple more things. Yeah, we can talk a few more minutes here. So chronic inflammation is the link between obesity, insulin resistance, which is the hallmark of T2D. You understand that obesity is directly linked to an induction of a meta-inflammatory response, linked to infiltration of macrophages into the adipose. Now, once those macrophages are in there, if they're M1, they're going to be promotive of the pro-inflammatory response. But just the introduction of macrophages into the adipose tissue, we have to describe that with nomenclature. So we're going to start calling that adipose tissue resident macrophages, or simply ATMs, adipose tissue macrophages. And again, you can have both classes, M1 and M2, which are going to then be measurable by the via flow cytometry, but via the differential expression of multiple surface markers. Those include the F480 protein, the CD11C, and the CD206 mannose receptor 1. That's also known as MRC1. So this is a way to differentiate the different ATMs, right? Adipose, remember that means adipose tissue macrophages. And you can look at ATMs from lean animals, because there are ATMs in lean animals, and show that they are alternatively activated. Because in lean animals, you get the M2 phenotype. And what does that look like with flow cytometry, the surface proteins? CD206 positive, CD301 positive. Okay. So I'm giving you now the details of how you measure this in the adipose. So those M2 macrophages are simply normally induced by T helper cell 2 cytokines, including interleukin 4 and 13, which we just have been talking about. And that then causes downregulation of inducible nitric oxide synthase with an upregulated expression of arginase and other anti-inflammatory factors. And I mentioned a few of those already. There's interleukin 10. But there's also a protein called interleukin 1 receptor antagonist. That's IL-1RA. All of that will attenuate inflammation in the lean individual. You see, that's what's normally occurring. All right, I see there. I need to stop about here. I don't want to go over. So hopefully you got a much clearer understanding of the chemistry involved in reactive oxygen linked to the biochemistry of lipid metabolism linked to the switching between glycolysis and fatty acid oxidation relative to M1, M2 polarity in diseased adipose in obese type 2 diabetic individuals. That's where we went to so far with those two lectures today. I will continue this next time. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra from Authentic Biochemistry Podcast Studios on 2 June 2023. And this was lecture number 2. Bye for now.